Okay. So, again, forget the introduction, or don't forget it, but we're switching to the old topic, and eventually it will connect to this introduction, okay? But, let me remind you where we were. We were computing the Concievich integral. So, here is the definition, a messy integral, further even renormalized. And I argued that in order to compute it for a specific knot, it's enough to know its values on three different things. So the cap, the crossing, sorry, four different things, and the associator, or the associativity. Maybe I should acknowledge that I'm sort of I tend to lie when I give math talks. I tend to lie in small ways, basically because I want to make things a little simpler. When I said the Concievich integral of associativity, that's actually not a well-defined quantity, okay? Because but on the other hand, you know, when I lie, I usually lie in ways that can be later corrected, okay? So the reason it's not well defined is because I said, you know, this should be epsilon relative to the whole thing, but the value depends on epsilon. And in fact, when epsilon goes to zero, the Concievich integral of this associativity diverges. It diverges because you may have tiny, tiny chords here, okay? And these small chords that connect this side to that side have a, right, in the Concievich formula, there is a denominator proportional to the distance. So you'll get a divergence, okay? So in fact, this is, not only this is not well defined, in fact, it's not even convergent. However, yes?
But the two strands are parallel where the distance is.
Well, they're parallel at the end, but they're not parallel right before. Okay? And that area where they're not parallel, they come very close to epsilon away from each other. And an epsilon goes to zero, and you actually do have divergences. on the other hand, these divergences are easily controlled. Okay, sorry, maybe even before that, in the Concievich integral itself, the issue never comes up. Because if two strands come next to each other, it's only because they are about to be capped. Okay? And if they are about to be capped, you apply a framing independence relation and there is no issue. So my definition of the Concievich integral as written here is correct and rigorous and has no issues. Okay? However, this associativity has issues. Okay? For example, I don't know which associativity I should point at. I mean, here, nothing in the world will cancel the small chords that may occur here that will diverge. Okay? On the other hand, these issues are easily controlled because the only problem comes from these short chords. These short chords, for the purpose of computing the divergence, you can ignore the contribution coming from chords coming from the other side. So the divergence is something that's sort of abelian that happens on only two strands, and it can be computed explicitly. So in fact, if you look at the definitions of at the definition of an associator, as it of the KZ associator, as it appears in the papers by Drinfeld, it is not the Kontsievich integral of that, but rather the Kontsievich integral of that pre-multiplied by some divergent factor that has to do with that, and post-multiplied by some other divergent factor that has to do with that, and these factors are arranged to diverge in exactly the opposite way as these diverge, as the Kontsievich integral diverges. And if you want a very quick way of explaining it, then here it is. So the associator is really the limit, and now what I'm going to say is correct. The associator is really the limit as epsilon goes to zero of, I want it to be that, where this distance is epsilon, of the Kontsievich integral of this, where, but that's divergent, so instead I add another piece going back to the beginning here, and another piece going back to the beginning here, and for the blue piece, I turn off interactions to the right. In other words, when you do the blue piece, you only consider chords going to the left. Okay? When you do the middle piece, the white piece, you consider chords going in both sides, to both sides. And when you do the red piece, you turn off interactions to the left. So, in other words, you consider only chords going to the right. Okay? And now this is convergent, because the divergence as epsilon goes to zero from here comes from small white chords here, and these exactly cancel the small blue chords that occur here, and likewise at the top. So this is the correct definition of an associator, and all the identities that I will verify later, pretending that this renormalization does not occur, actually survive the process of renormalization. So, I mean, there is a layer of... So I will verify a few identities in a minute, and there is a layer of further complexity beyond my verification, so I will sort of loosely verify, but the layer of further complexity is to check that my verifications are not spoiled by this renormalization process. Okay? And I've used the word renormalization, and it's not entirely coincidental. It is very similar to things that appear in quantum field theory in general, where some divergences occur. Where you have divergences, you declare a cutoff in order to remove the divergence. You want to take the cutoff to zero, but you have to sort of put a counter term that has a behavior opposite to that divergence. And if you've seen these things, good. If you haven't seen these things, you know, I'm just making the point that it's vaguely related. Okay? So as I said, I don't know what to say. I'm not sure it's a good property, but I tend to lie. I'm a habitual liar. Okay, anyway, this I did. So now let me remind you, what are the identity... Okay, so... So let me restart, okay? So you know what, let me just do it more or less correct. So what I want to do now is to, yes?
Yesterday you computed this associativity and you got multiple zeta values. Where was epsilon?
So I cheated, of course. I didn't compute, right, I didn't compute the most general associativity. Right, I didn't compute the most general core diagram. I intentionally chose the core diagram that started with a long chord at the bottom, meaning one going to the right, not the one that is divergent, and, well, a long chord at the top, meaning not the one that will lead to a divergency. Had I used, had I not done it, you would have gotten a divergent integral here. But on the other hand, you know, it would be renormalized away, and at the end you would still get multiple zeta values. Okay? I don't know what I have to say in my defense. I mean, that's okay. Anyway, so let me So again I will be a little loose, and but the idea is right, there are those four quantities I need to know. There is phi, there are those four quantities relative to which everything else is computable, or using which everything else is computable. These are phi, it's r, and it's the two caps, which I'm not sure I want to give them even, I'm not sure if I even want to give them names, okay? An arbitrary knot can be presented as somehow a, sorry, as a, oh, yeah, yeah, it's here, as somehow a composition of these four basic quantities. And then my idea is to, forget that these quantities could have come from the Koncievich integral, and just search for quantities like that. So search for R, which is an element of A of two strands, phi, which is an element of A of three strands, and cup, which I will ignore, such that the machine presented here constructs, will construct an invariant out of them. Okay? Okay? Such that, well, I mean, I'll be loose. Machine constructs an invariant. Okay? Okay, so that's the idea, and I guess I'll try to make it more formal, and then write what exactly are the identities. I already mentioned them last time, but I want to do it a bit more formally.
Which machine constructs finger?
The machine is take an arbitrary knot, write it in this funny form, and then each slice will correspond to one of these pieces, and then multiply the slices appropriately. And okay. So maybe now I'll just describe the machine more correctly. Okay, so let PAB, or maybe UPAB for usual, as opposed to W and V that will come later, but for now let me drop it. So let PAB be the category of parenthesized. Is there any native English speaker here?
I'm not gonna, that's correct.
Okay, thanks. The category of parenthesized braids. Okay? Mac, you're a you're a native English speaker. Brendan, so are you.
Yeah, but I'm not very good spelling.
Okay. So let me explain. Okay? So the objects, so basically I'm formalizing this construction. Okay? So the objects of this category are, well, on first inspection, they are, you know what, if I'm talking about braids, it's good enough. I'll just stay at first inspection. They are parenthetizations. So they are parenthetizations. Sorry, the question mark is about the spelling, not about the things, okay? So, meaning, you take a number of dots and you put a complete set of parentheses around them, okay? So the objects are parenthetizations, and the morphisms, so the morphisms between two parenthetizations will be just a braid, an ordinary braid whose bottom is at the bottom parenthetization and whose top is at the top parenthetization. So maybe it will look like this. The parenthetizations play no role whatsoever inside. They only happen at the boundaries. Okay? So this is a category by stacking. So you can stack such things on top of each other if the parenthetizations match. Okay? Yeah?
Wouldn't it be PAB end? I mean, don't you want to fix the number of points?
No.
So what happens if at the bottom you have 12 and on top you...
Then the set of morphisms is empty.
Okay.
Okay, so it's either a single big category that has all braid groups sort of in it at the same time, or it's a big tower of categories. I want the latter because I want to say a little more. Okay, so this is a category by stacking, but it also has additional operations with auxiliary, I hope this is correct, operations, yeah, I know, sort of tapes have never mind.
Just while we're still on spelling.
What?
I didn't have the courage to challenge the native English speakers, but it's actually parenthesized.
You mean with E?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Okay. So it's a category with auxiliary operations. Now, let me say that in general, I'm not worried by that. So basically, the things, how should I say that? Some people like groups. Some people like planar algebras. Some people like operads. Some people like categories. Okay, but I sort of not only I like all of them. I sort of what I think in general you should be considering is arbitrary algebraic structures. So an arbitrary algebraic structure is basically a collection of sets of basically elements, and then a bunch of operations between them. So you might have an operation from this set to that set, an operation from this set to that set, but also you may have binary operations. So you may have an operation with two inputs, one coming from here, one coming from there, and with outputs here. Okay? So, I mean, I don't mind talking about, or not only I don't mind, I find it necessary to talk about arbitrary algebraic structures. Okay? So a group is an example of an arbitrary algebraic structure where you have only one set of objects and, well, essentially one binary operation. To be more precise, you also have to have an inverse, which is a unary operation, and also an identity, which is a nullary operation, right? An operation with no input and a single output. Okay? A category is an algebraic structure where the sets of elements, to me, are the sets of morphisms. Okay? And you have a composition operation between some sets of morphisms and some sets of morphisms into some other sets of morphisms, you know, if the corresponding objects match, okay? But it's just an algebraic structure, right? A planar algebra is also an example of an algebraic structure. Okay, so the things I like to talk about are arbitrary algebraic structures, and one reason I like to talk about arbitrary algebraic structures is because if you try to think about knotted trivalent graphs as an algebraic structure, then there are not any of the standard ones. It's not a category, not a planar algebra, not nothing. It's just an algebraic structure. For every the structure here, or the for every graph, where is it? Maybe it was the next thing. Yeah. So for every graph gamma, you get a space A of gamma, and then in between these spaces there are lots and lots and lots of operations, and I've just described how to parameterize them. Okay? But, okay, sorry, so that's a philosophical point. Anyway, having made the philosophical point, what are the auxiliary operations for PAB? Answer, a few uninteresting ones, and then a few interesting ones. So the uninteresting ones are, if you have an object with n dots in it, and some arbitrary parenthetization. I mean, I'm not specifying what it is because it doesn't matter for the purpose of this operation. So you will have an operation SI, which is the operation of delete the ith strand. Okay, no, sorry, I shouldn't have talked about objects. I should have talked about morphisms. So if you have here is a parenthesized tangle, okay, sorry, a parenthesized braid, this is a parenthesized braid on four strands, the operation SI will delete the ith strand. So S2, for example, will delete the second strand. And if you delete the second strand, you get a smaller parenthetization at the top, a smaller parenthetization at the bottom, and a smaller thing overall. And let me say that I always count at the bottom. Count at bottom. So that's not a terribly interesting operation.
not to be pedantic, but when your objects, the parentheses are always n minus one parentheses, or your object is always fully parenthesized?
It's always, I don't know.
But it just
it's only always fully parenthesized. Does it mean n or n minus one?
I think
n minus one, yes, right. Because if you want to bracket two things, you need one bracket. So, yeah. Okay. Anyway, here's the more interesting operation. So, the operations di where I goes from 0 to n plus 1, where n is the number of strands that the object has. Okay? So, if... you know what? I'll do it for a single thing, but I'll do all. So this is an a morphism with two strands in it. So I should be able to tell you what d0 of it is, d1, d2, and d3. Okay. So d1 and d2 will mean double strand number 1 or 2. So how do you double strand number 1? You just replace it by a pair of parallel strands, okay? Where the two kind of daughter strands are innermost parenthesized. And of course it makes sense always, right? Okay. The operation D2 would do likewise to strand number 2. Okay? The operation D0 will be completely different. It will be add a zero strand far on the left, and this is D3. And the operation D3 will be add a third strand far on the right. Okay? So it will be this is going to that.
And parentheses-wise, D0, D3 mean you add...
Far on the right means that the parenthesis is sort of on this outside.
So it just means adding one more parentheses, which will be covering the whole thing.
Yes.
Right? Extremely.
Yes. So basically, as an operation on objects, right, it's an operation on morphisms, but what it does to the object at the bottom, is it will take this parenthesization and replace it by this parenthesization with another thing on the left. Okay? So, you know, if you're fond of the language of operads, sorry, I'm looking at Philippe because I think he is. But anyway, in the language of operads, you can say all of this in fewer words, but the price you have to pay is you have to say many words about the language of operads before. Okay? But anyway, and I think this is it. So, this is it in as much as operations that I need. Okay? So, claim what happened to the
call the second operation AI instead of DI because you've been using D for delete.
Yeah, I know, but I'm afraid in different contexts you have different names for different things, and there is a good reason for this, but so, you know, if you want to know what, so in simplicial sets, in the theory of simplicial sets, there are face maps that are called DI, and there are degeneracies that are called SI, and they satisfy the exact same relations. So, in fact, you can check here that... you know, there are obviously some relations between DI and SI. So relations like DI DJ is equal to, so let's assume that I is smaller than J. In fact, much smaller than J, meaning J is not I plus 1. I don't want to even They're far away, okay? Then di dj is... first do dj, then do di. It's the same as doing... First do dj, then di. It's the same as dj, di. Somewhere there should be a plus one. Plus one. Yeah. Because if you've doubled the ith strand, basically the point is doubling two strands, it doesn't matter which one you double first. It only matters in as much as the indexing is concerned, and I hope I've wrote the right identity. Anyway, the collection of identities satisfied by these gadgets is the same as the collection of identities that appear in the definition of simplicial sets. And this is, in fact, used in various places. But anyway, at the moment, let's just stick with the names. Okay? Claim parenthesis, this category of parenthesis braids is generated. So what do I mean by an algebraic set, an algebraic structure is generated by something? I mean, you mark a small number of elements, one here, one here, one, I don't know, another one here, and generated means that all other elements are obtained from these few by using the operations that are available in arbitrary orders, okay? So, and the operations that are available for us are the category operations, meaning composition, and these new operations I've just introduced, okay? So, PAB is generated by the crossing and the associativity, and that's all. Okay? I think to be precise, I have to, since I didn't say anything about inverses, I must include the inverse crossing and the inverse associativity. Okay? But there are relations. But there are relations. Okay? And in fact, here is a summary of the relations. So, well, this relation essentially says that this is the inverse of that. Oops, it's magnetic. Sorry, this is the inverse of that. Okay? In both ways, sort of left inverse and right. I mean, the two ways of multiplying them gives the identity. Okay? Then there is another silly relation that says that, well, the one crossing is the opposite of the other crossing. Okay? Then there are so-called locality relations. So, you know, you could write them formally, but it's better not. So basically, if you have, so sort of when I write a strand with a slash on it, I mean it could be a bundle of strands, okay? So if you have any thing on a bundle of strands and any other thing on a bundle of strands, and then you can slide them past each other. So this includes in it several relations. So it includes, okay, here is an example, associativity and a faraway crossing. Right? Could be interchanged. Okay? And by the way, oops, sorry, I made a mistake. I said PIB is generated by these things, but I didn't prove it. Okay? I think the proof is sufficiently clear, right? But nevertheless, just for the point, just for just to do it right, okay? So let's call this thing R, and let's call this thing phi. So the thing written here, up to here, is phi to which I apply the operation. So, you know, let me introduce another convention. You know, I really don't like applying operations the usual way, sort of when you write f of x, I prefer to write x into f. Okay? And the reason is that applying, if you write it from right to left, you basically have to think in the reverse order. Okay? So take phi, apply to it the operation d4, so add a fourth strand, and apply to it the operation double that fourth strand, so that it becomes two strands near each other. So that's d4, and in fact apply to it d4 again, but it's a different d4.
D5.
4. I've added a strand on the very right.
So that makes a fourth strand.
Now I have a fourth strand here.
Yes.
And I double it.
So it should be n plus 1, this operation, right? The index, sub-index on that.
Sorry?
So for example, when you have two things there, the adding thing on the right was d3.
But I'm not adding two things. What I'm doing here is not to add and then add again.
Yes, okay.
Okay? I'm adding one strand,
yes,
and then I'm doubling it. You see, there is a difference. Had I written here, okay, so...
Okay, if it was d5, then the last one would be much further away.
Yes, it would be the wrong parenthesization.
Yes.
Okay. And likewise, the thing written here is R, to which I apply d0, so I add a strand on the left. Now I double it, and now I double the second one. Woo, mess, okay? But the claim is that these two commute. Okay? The assertion is that these two commute, more or less, okay? So, I mean, this is this relation, and again, I don't think I want to... I'm not sure there is a point writing it more formally, because you'll see this relation is actually trivial to verify at the end. Then there are slightly more interesting things. So if you have an associativity and you have any mess placed on it, you can slide it through the associativity. Again, I don't want to write it formally, I'm just stating it. Next thing, I guess you could do it the other way around, and also you can slide things. So if you have a whatever mess, you can slide it over a crossing or under a crossing. Okay? And all of these are not the interesting relations. Here are the interesting relations. The pentagon and the two hexagons. Okay? So let me write them in formulas. You know what? No, let me write just one of them in formulas. And in fact, I will write it in two standard notations. So the pentagon, if I denote the associativity by A, just give it a name, A. So, by the way, distinguish between this braid A and the associator, which is after you've computed the Concievich integral, which is what I will call phi. Okay? So, in parentheses, phi is Z of A. Okay, so A is sort of before the computation. So the relation that is written here is d 4 of a times d, right? So I'm reading from the bottom to the top. I've added the fourth strand. Then now I'm doubling the middle strand. So times d 2 of a times, now I'm adding a zeroth strand. So times d 0 of a is equal to d double this first strand, so d1 of a times d, sorry, d1a times d3a. Okay?
Why is it on the left down?
Sorry?
So you apply d2.
Because I'm not consistent, because you can do either one.
Yeah.
It's sort of, and it's useful to be able to do either one. Again, sort of, in general, right? It's good if a language allows you to say the same thing in two ways, and then you can use whichever is more appropriate. When you need to do a series of things, it's clearly more appropriate to go from left to right. When you do one, it doesn't matter. Okay? Good. By the way, completely as an aside, you sort of already see homological algebra here. Do you? You see, replace multiplication by sums and replace and move terms from the right side to the odd side, to the left side, and you'll have sum minus 1 to the I, di of A is equal to 0, which is clearly the definition of a differential. Okay? So in fact it clearly is a it really is a definition of a differential. Okay, I think I will not write the hexagon, but you in principle know how to do it. Okay? Good. These relations include caps and caps, and since I didn't talk about them, I'm still talking about braids, I don't need to say anything about them. One more word, the Rademeister 3 relation is not even, is a particular case of one of the locality relation. It's just the fact that you can slide one thing over another. Okay, so if you're missing the Rademeister 3 move, it is in fact a special case of one of these relations. Okay? Good. I think it's time to stop, isn't it? I do have a couple of minutes? Okay. So let me define a second category. So this is the domain category for the invariant. Now I want a target category. Okay? So again, I'm in the process of formalizing this construction, this picture, and the domain category is knots written this way, or at the moment still just braids. And the target category will be core diagrams on top of these. Okay? So my next category I will call PAC, parenthesized chord diagrams. The objects are the same, exact same objects, but the morphisms are the following. So I'll be a bit loose. So let me leave space here with a comma for fixing the mistake. Okay? And now let me write what a morphism is. So a morphism is a parenthesized skeleton. So a thing like that, or perhaps even with a crossing, but taken combinatorially, not topologically. So there is no distinction between over and under. So essentially, it's a parenthetization at the top, parenthetization at the bottom, and a permutation in between, written using lines. Okay. And on top of such a creature, a core diagram. So a core diagram written on these things. Okay? And in fact, I allow linear combinations of such things. So, you know, I could take this one and then 22 over 7 times, I don't know what, another one. Okay? Now, to be precise, when I take linear combinations, I want all the skeleta to be the same. Right? Okay, so I want all core diagrams to be core diagrams on top of the same skeleton. And the way to do it is to specify the skeleton in advance. So a morphism is a specification of a skeleton, and then a linear combination of core diagrams on top of it. Okay? And finally, there are two variants. Okay? One variant is the variant which I sort of implied here by writing all chords horizontal. Okay? But there is another variant, I don't know, what should I call it, parenthesized chord diagrams, not necessarily horizontal, where I will also allow chords to go, cross each other. Okay? Or even this way. Okay? Oh, and I forgot one more thing. And of course, you have to mod out by 40. Always you have to mod out by 40. Okay? So, I think I'm out of time. But the next thing I need to do is to enhance this category with the same sort of operations as over there. So with the same sort of additional operations as over there. And then say, well, I am seeking a morphism between these two categories. Enhanced categories. So let's meet again at 2, I suppose.
You allow infinite sum?
Do I allow? Yes, it's completed. Sorry. Always I complete. Things are always completed. So.